Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail?
It's a hot day around the world. There's some confusion. There's some contradictions. Maybe some cover-ups on what really happened to Mr. Osama. This is interesting. The New York Times reported that he was dead back in, I think, 2004. Died of kidney disease. Was being treated by kidney disease, for kidney disease. An Egyptian paper claimed that he was dead and buried in about December 7th. 2001, and now, according to, of all the cable news network CNN, stating that a group of Pakistani lawyers in that area said that this whole thing's a fabrication. So I guess it gets down to be, will the real Osama bin Laden resurrect from his grave so we can decide whether this guy is dead or alive? Or when he died, and see the DNA and all that. It's really getting boring with all the economic problems that we're having. Excuse me. Among the political facts, frauds, and fictions, among the other ones that we have, is this whole business about multiracial, biracial. As one person said to me, we're all mixed. We're human beings, and that's what... One professor who was involved in the U.S. Census said when he got his census form last year, and they have all the ethnic groups, and there's so much mixing, especially this generation of people. And the New York Times had an interesting article, and everybody should look at that, about these kids and their, I shouldn't say kids, but these youth, young people in there, 20s and early 30s that are the products of, say, a Jewish heritage father or mother, and maybe a black African, Negro was the old term used, and maybe a Cherokee Indian or whatever. It's multicultural, multi-ethnic, especially during the Haight-Ashbury days, which I lived through. There were these love babies and white women I knew in our office. We had some Canadian women who were in the country, I guess, illegally. We found out later when they went back to Canada. And they would shack up with black guys. This was a new thing, and they wouldn't use protection. In those days, people really weren't concerned about it. And they didn't use birth control, and they had these love babies. And interestingly, when they'd have him at home, they wouldn't have him circumcised. They wouldn't go to the hospital. On this whole circumcision thing, or the foreskin police, as we call it, there was a report from San Francisco General Hospital where we have a lot of babies who are from ethnic backgrounds, Chinese, Hispanic, even Russian, I don't know about Russian Jewish, but there was a poll taken over there, and I'm going to try to get it again, where a growing number of these mothers are refusing to have their babies circumcised. I understand also with Blue Cross, it wasn't elective nearly $100 to circumcise male babies. Of course, no one is talking about female genital circumcision. I don't know of any cases here in America where this has gone on, but it still goes on in Africa and some of the Arab countries, and that really is unnecessary. Of course, there's many reasons for doing this, and it's interesting, we had last Friday the wedding of the year, a billion people watched it, of young Prince William and his bride, Kate Middleton. It'd be interesting to see when, if she gets pregnant, whether some media person will ask her, are you going to do what Diana did, or claim that she did with her two sons, and have them have the birth in a public hospital and not have them circumcised. Now, the whole issue of circumcision with the British royal family goes back to Queen Victoria back in the Victorian age. She had a mohel, that is a rabbi, specially trained, specially designated rabbi, come in and make sure that the job was done correctly. Her Victorian mentality was that this discouraged male masturbation. We know how true that is. And then in World War One, when a lot of American youth went over to France, they discovered the girls of Paris. There was a lot of venereal disease, and the American military decided maybe we should do something about this and have these, if they're not circumcised when they come in, to have them circumcised while they're in the service. And during World War II, there was a lot of this, and it was such phrase, it was used as a disciplinary method also, and some officers would tell their men, I'll have your wing flaps cut off. During the Vietnam War, this was done, but a lot of American youths after World War II were circumcised. But this seemed to have reached the high point during the hippie days, and when we had these love babies born at home or in the apartments or whatever. We don't know what the statistics are now, but there are a lot of gay men, homosexual men, who were circumcised at birth, and they're getting into this foreskin restoral. This is a small, I could call it a cottage industry, trying to restore the foreskin. It's very painful when you're an adult. And even if you are circumcised when a male is after birth, it's painful maybe a month before that part of the body heals without getting an erection and all of that. Now, I came across a case when I was researching for the U.S. Navy, the Steve Nery case, U.S. Navy sailor, which is still going on after 15, 16 years, where a federal military person went into a federal hospital, and he had a heart condition and he was supposed to be operated on that. Somehow they switched the files and he got circumcised and he died. He couldn't sue because there is a U.S. Supreme Court decision called the Freres Act, F-R-E-R-E-S, Brothers in French, and it's misnamed. But anyway, Art Bernclaw of the Veterans for Constitutional Law has been trying to get Congress to overturn that or to grant all U.S. servicemen and women the right to sue when they have been violated while in the service of the United States, while serving in the military. So far, nothing. Now, today also, and I think I have this in our archives, this is the week that the British, the Australians, and the Canadians landed at Suva Bay in the Gallipoli, And of course, the British colonel, who was a colonel in the U.S. Army, but he was a lieutenant at Gallipoli, we did the only interview that of him that was ever done, and we had it here in our archives, and I can't find it. We had planned that. It's been a rush day, so we may have this Friday when we have our show. But just for the heck of it, we're going to salute, since Prince William is serving in the British military as a rescue pilot, which is very noble, we're going to play a salute to him and the British Air Force, the IRF's march. Let me find it. Here it is. And salute to Prince William. Things about Prince William, and this is U.S. Senator got some legislation passed to the U.S. Congress when we brought up the case of Steve Nary and the expose of these San Francisco homosexuals who were involved with video voyeur, the international sex trade, where they're spying on policemen, firemen, military personnel, especially Marines. We discovered this, that one of the U.S. senators got this legislation, the Video Voyeur Act, passed through Congress. And one of the things that came up recently in the last 6 months was Prince William was at a soccer match and he had to urinate, as guys do, and there's no portable toilets around, so he's peeing in the bushes. And these homosexual paparazzi use their long lens cameras and camcorders to photograph him, and it's disgusting. So we use the phrase, even a prince can't take a pee in private. It's really disgusting. And this goes on, and there ought to be some public revulsion against this for anybody. There's no need to do this, and why be a voyeur? Why make money off of a very private thing that people, everybody has to do? Even the dog has to lift its leg. So enough of that. Now, one of the controversies that's come up on Mr. Obama, not Mr. Osama, is this whole business about who he was the first black, or his the first black to be in the White House. That's a political fraud, a political fiction. There is a scholar out there, and there's some controversy about this, that there were at least eight former late presidents from Jackson on who may have had some Negro or African or black blood. The one that's most credible is Warren G. Harding. The G for Gamaliel, that's his mother, gave him a name, created a name that she thought was biblical sounding. He was the president after Wilson in 1921, and he this stalked him all his life. And he finally said, look, if one of my ancestors jumped over the back fence, I can't help that. That's a paraphrase. And there are pictures of some of his relatives that are definitely have some black blood. But the important thing is you don't look at the color of a man's skin, as Martin Luther King said. You look at the content of their character, or the lack of character. And there are a lot of people, a growing number of people in the media and elsewhere, who don't have any character and could use some. So we'll get into more of that. And also there's some fascinating things about Harding as far as the U.S. Navy. He is the guy who helped promote the advancement of naval technology by pushing for aircraft carriers when they had the Washington Naval Disarmament meeting. And the future Admiral Iwasuku Yamamoto was part of that. He was a captain in the Japanese Imperial Navy, and he had studied at Harvard. He had traveled around the United States. He had seen our great industrial capacity and our ability to rev it up. And he warned that after Pearl Harbor and after the Japanese had struck at Singapore, Hong Kong, the Philippines, Indonesia, in the month after Pearl Harbor or during Pearl Harbor, that and China, of course, that the Japanese military would run wild. But after a year or two, America would have revved up its mighty industrial capacity and aimed it at Japan and defeated Japan. Fortunately, he didn't live to see it. He was shot down in what was considered a military assassination. Fascinating story in and of itself. But throughout our history, we have had, especially recently, more and more people, especially in the entertainment world, who come from, whose parents are of multiracial background. One of the most interesting, I think I brought this up last time, this Showtime cable show called Prison Break, which is set in Illinois, of all places. The star of that is a guy named Wentworth Miller. Fascinating guy. His father, African background, and some other, I think Jewish and some other, born in England, emigrated legally to the United States, studied at Harvard Law School, became a lawyer. His mother has Lebanese, Jewish, and a bunch of other ethnic groups, ethnicities in her background and his background. Fascinating guy. Lena Horne was probably the first major, the great singer, Lena Horne was the first major person to marry. She was light-skinned herself and probably had some Anglo blood or Caucasian blood way back, to a Jewish guy, I don't know if you practice, Lenny Haitman. And at that time, during the early 50s, he was, in effect, blackballed. He was a great musician, but he stuck by his wife. They had a daughter, and she married, I think, somebody that's multi-ethnic. Throughout history, we have had people, prominent figures who were of African, Caucasian background, ethnics. One of the most prominent in Russia was Pushkin. His grandfather was an African brought to Russia during the time of the great Russian Tsar, father of Russian neighbor, Peter the Great, Peter Ustinov. The great actor, raconteur, gourmet. His grandmother was Ethiopian. in American history, recently, the most recent, General Colin Powell, from his parents are from, I believe, the West Indies, and he's light skinned. There's definitely some Anglo blood, Caucasian blood there. We had Ed Brooke, senator from Massachusetts, the lover, repeated lover of Barbara Walters. He married an Italian when he was in the OSS in World War II. He also reportedly is multi-ethnic, or was, he's dead. We have, now this is interesting. Jacqueline Kennedy, the late Jacqueline Kennedy's father's name, Black Jack Bouvier. very dark-looking man. And, of course, she has a sister, a younger sister named Lee Radziwill, married a Polish guy. Anyway, Jacqueline's father reportedly had suspected African blood in his background. Maybe that's why he called him Blackjack. Also, Blackjack was the name of General John Pershing, the World War I commander of the U.S. Army, and also the guy who went just before the war, led a military contingent into Mexico because Pancho Villa was raiding the cities and the settlements along the U.S.-Mexican border. General Patton was also, he wasn't a general then, but he was also part of that raid. So, and then we have today, we have a growing number of actors and entertainers who are of mixed heritage. We have Lenny Kravitz, who was in that scandal. Let's see, who else we have? Harry Belafonte. We have, God, there's so many of them. What's her name? She married, she's divorced now. Oh, God, her face escapes me. But there are a lot of these people, and it really doesn't matter. The question people should be concerned about is, are these people ethical? Are they competent? Are they honest? Oh, now she was in the Supremes, the little woman. She married a Norwegian. They have a son in his early 20s, I think, and he is now in the music business. One of the Supremes, they were the black women from Detroit who were quite famous, and then one of the women married that Norwegian shipping or a financier. I mean, that's about as Caucasian as you can get. And then there is also in Germany, because the Germans allowed ethnics to come in after World War II to do the work that Germans didn't want to do, Turks and Africans. And there was intermarriage. After World War II, there were black American GIs in Europe, and they shacked up with European women. One of the most famous cases is André Watts, the great concert a classical pianist. His mother is Hungarian, and she is a classical trained pianist. She trained her son Andre. The father was a black American GI. He abandoned the family. Then we had now somebody who looks black is this guy Jarrett, Keith Jarrett, who's actually Jewish, I think, and Hungarian, but he's not. He doesn't have any African blood, although that's what they say he doesn't have. But anyway, he is this. He's another classical trained modern musician who have been believed to have some mixed blood. And then we had Booker T. Washington, the great scientist, and let's see, who else? There's some others who have been who are dead who have had mixed blood. Now, getting back to the question of the what we call the foreskin police, San Francisco has started with the policing garbage cans. That is, there are homeless people on the street who go around and collect bottles and cans, which they bring to recycling centers to get some money so they can survive. They're trying to help themselves. So some people objected, and there were messes left when the garbage was put out, and people got upset. The scavenger system that had a contract in the city got upset because they felt these people were ripping off the garbage that was rightfully theirs and in their containers. Then we have the graffiti police that we have these midnight chicken scrawlers, as one artist called them, going around and doing graffiti on people's garage doors, their buildings, public buildings, and not cleaning up their mess. So when this happens, the owner of the property gets a notice from the city and county of San Francisco. And we'll put this up on our Mucus Veritas website to clean up the graffiti. And people have done this, even though that the owners of the building and tenants of the building are not the perpetrators. So we have the graffiti police. Now it's proposed we're going to have the foreskin police, where this guy Lloyd Schofield, been trying to get a hold of him. He's about 55. He's from Wisconsin. He lives in an upscale neighborhood of San Francisco. He got enough signatures to try to put on the new ballot coming up in June or November, where San Francisco will add a clause in its enforcement clause in its police code to ban circumcision of anybody under 18. I don't know how they're going to enforce it. So the cynics have been cackling or joking that we're going to have foreskin police in the pediatric wards and maternity wards and the obstetrics operating rooms of hospitals. We can't even get medical insurance for people, but yet they want to do this. So this is part of what I call the Lavender Left lunatics. We're going to have Friday, again, looking at J. Edgar Hoover, an aspect of him that people didn't know about, and we just discovered when we interviewed Professor James Gleason, and his interviews are up on in our archives, and they will be available. You can download them and listen to you on your iPod, or excuse me, on the web or on your computer. We discussed Hitler and Eisenhower, who painted, of course, Churchill, and Stalin didn't paint, as far as we know. He painted people into a corner, in a manner of speaking, in the furthest gulag in Siberia that he could find. But J. Edgar Hoover did do some painting, and we also I knew that J. Edgar Hoover was responsible for controlling the appearance and the content of anything about the FBI, such as the famous movie The House on 92nd Street, which was starring Lloyd Nolan, which was a depiction of how the Nazis in World War II tried to steal the atom bomb secrets. We were developing an atomic bomb in Chicago at Stagg Field in Oak Ridge, and music that they used a theme by Richard Strauss called The Festival Prelude. I thought it was really odd. He used another theme in the radio program The FBI and Peace and War by Serge Prokofiev, Russian composer, great Russian modern composer. He went back to fled Russia after the fall of the Tsar and then went back, went to Paris like a lot of Russians did at that time, then went back to Russia, lived there and composed symphonies, operas, War and Peace, five concertos, piano concertos, and then the opera of The Love of Three Oranges, and the march from that was used as the theme for the FBI and Peace and War. Considering that J. Edgar Hoover was a very strong anti-communist, it was very bizarre that he would use that theme. And this program debuted on radio, the FBI and Peace and War, during World War II. So we'll play a clip from that from our educational archives that we put together at Western Public Radio and KALW and the Carson Vizzola Archives. So we'll end with our usual thing. We will be back Friday for the one-hour show from 5 to 6, and hopefully we'll have all this other stuff together. And so we'll end with what is typical of American politics.
Hey, Ben, want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace Ben.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jacks, bet up.
Politics and poker, shuffle up and cards and find the joker. Need a game for children.
poker? Which is more important?
Parrot raise.
Madam.
Little trade, good as gold.
Well, we'll be back Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Thank you for listening, and this will be up in the archives, and you can download at your leisure and listen for your pleasure. Good night.